podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm chatting with Conran Tobin, known more commonly by his nickname, Ranners.
Okay, Gregan, I got this business proposal for you, but I can't tell you about it, okay? I'm going to need you to trust me.
You worked with Fnatic for a year. What was that support like from an esports org as a FIFA player?
Yeah, so we ended up actually moving over to London. The three players, plus Kodro, who you mentioned, and our coach were all living in this house.
What's the most you've ever spent on a game of FIFA?
Myself, personally, I think was $5,000 was the most I spent in 1 year, which...
That's quite low compared to some
like
players.
Isn't that crazy? Like, honestly, it's not even shocking. Which is terrible. Like,
what advice would you give to a current pro player who was worried about their future after being a competitor?
But yeah, it's all about how you position yourself.
What would you tell them as like the one thing they need to change about FIFA esports? Because obviously there's a lot of things you'd change.
Yeah, I have a top two.
Okay.
But
you can go with two then.
Okay, I'll go with my top two. So one is we just need to return of all these LAN events. That's just not even a question.
Make sure to follow for future episodes and let us know who you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Ranners beyond the game. Well, we can get started then, Ranners.
Excellent.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. Welcome to Beyond the Game. It's good to have you here because we met Gfinity Elite Series days. And, you know, a lot has changed for both of us since then. But back then we were young competitors and excited esports future people. And now we're here getting old in the esports industry. What are you doing these days, Ranners?
Yeah, no, that was a good time. You know, I kind of do miss it a little bit. That was what, like 5 years ago now?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, now I'm kind of switched career paths a little bit, you know, gone away from kind of the pro scene, obviously still dabbling in it a little bit, and then pretty halted my content creation as well. So I'm working for a stealth startup where I am a creator relationship specialist. So I'm working with creators over there. But unfortunately, that's all I'm allowed to reveal. So it's top secret stuff.
We were talking earlier and you're saying it's a stealth startup. And I was asking, like, why is it stealth? And you say it's just the thing you're doing, someone else could do it if they wanted to. So in order to get it ready and prepared for the release, you wanted to try and keep it stealthy. How's that experience for you, especially because you have to talk to creators? You know, what's that experience for you having to be sort of hush-hush about what you're working on?
It definitely makes it way more difficult because it's like, okay, Gregan, I got this business proposal for you, but I can't tell you about it, okay? I'm going to need you to trust me. Just sign this NDA, okay? And then we'll talk about it. So that's kind of how the process goes. Problem with that is, obviously, it's from a company you've never heard of, and it's just this random email. So, like, the conversion rate can be quite low, so it's kind of difficult. But as soon as, obviously, I get them to sign an NDA, we can go through it fully, and then that's pretty okay.
But before that, like I said, you were there at Gfinity Elite Series. You were a FIFA pro for Fnatic. We met through, I was friends with Kodro, so I got to hang out with you a little bit. And I got to see you winning the Gfinity Elite Series. What was that experience for you at that time, being a pro player and ultimately winning a tournament?
Yeah, I mean, that was a phenomenal experience. I mean, it's still the highlight of my career, and it remained that way, even though that was my first real year competing. So it's kind of strange to just win something so early. I feel like at the time, didn't even appreciate it as much as maybe if I was competing for 3 years and then finally won a tournament. I ended up winning it in my first year. So I don't think I took it in as much as I do now, reflecting back, but still absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to win the Gfinity Elite Series Season 3, same season as you, for Rocket League as a coach. So we were winners the same weekend, which was quite special. But when it came to your FIFA career, you said you started around that season, and that was FIFA 18, right?
Yeah, so that was FIFA 18. I mean, in FIFA 17, I had kind of just practiced a bit and like did a few random online tournaments. Because I actually started playing like that game like mid-year, I think, as well. So then FIFA 18 came along, and I actually started that with the intention of like making one of these events. They obviously announced like foot champions, and you had to do the like October qualifier. So I actually fully went for that and ended up like 16th on the leaderboards in the world, and then just got invited to that Barcelona event.
So those qualifiers, so what I really want to try and get here is try and have the listeners and the viewers understand what FIFA esports was like then, how it's changed, how it changes each year and everything. And I was always mesmerized by this system that you guys had around the qualifiers. So that was the weekend league, right? Where you'd turn up, play the game, and you would essentially play in what was like a Swiss bracket. You'd play against people with a similar level of wins to you. And you'd play 40 games originally, and then it changed to 30 years later. So you'd play 40 games in a weekend of FIFA. And in order to get into those top 16s, like you said, it would typically have to be 40 to 37 wins, right?
Yeah, so back then, yeah, there was 40 games a weekend, which is just crazy looking back to it. Like you said, it went down to 30. It's actually down to 20 these days.
Wow.
It's only 20 games now. And even that feels like a lot, so it's funny looking back. But yeah, so it was 40 games. I believe for that month, so it was a qualifying month, there was four weekends, so 160 games total. And I think I got 154 out of 160 wins, so I only dropped six games over that. And yeah, so basically the top 64 in the world based on wins for that weekend would then go on to qualify for the LAN.
And that would be often how you get picked up into orgs, was they'd see who was doing well in the weekend league, and you'd start getting messages from various orgs. And then you worked with Fnatic for a year, and I got to see the support Fnatic gave to their players. It was definitely one of the best in FIFA at the time. What was that support like from an esports org as a FIFA player?
Yeah, so we ended up actually moving over to London. That was after the Gfinity win. We got a gaming house in London, and the three players plus Kodro, who you mentioned, and our coach were all living in this house. So support-wise, obviously it was there. Funding, we also had a mental coach and stuff, so that was really helpful. But I think ultimately in the end, it became a negative having so much support for a couple of reasons. Top two would probably be the expectations and pressure were just extremely high. But secondly, I think it was just extreme burnout because you're just living in the house with FIFA people the entire time. You're talking about FIFA 24/7. You're practicing FIFA, and then you're talking about practicing FIFA, and then you're viewing the FIFA you practice. So ultimately, it just became really, really intense. And I think, honestly, that at the start of the year was really beneficial and we got ahead of the curve. But towards the end, we had just completely burned ourselves out and we're not that interested in the game.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a little bit later on, but I think now's a good time to ask, is what's the highs and lows of being a pro player, especially in a game like FIFA where there's a lot of stuff out of your control? There's, you know, the in-game officiation. I don't know how you guys refer to it, but the ref's calls. And then you've got the variation within the tournaments, how frequent they are, you know, each new game coming out. You know, how are the highs and lows of being a FIFA pro?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of variety and a lot of factors, which I suppose make it kind of difficult. The one thing I will say is the hardest thing definitely is mental, obviously. But the reason for that is because of kind of how the gameplay works, the kind of RNG, if you will. Because the game can be quite luck-based. You know, it's just how it goes from a certain shot. Because passes, shots, and stuff, it's one of the only games where you can do the exact same thing twice, and it just has different outcomes because it's all percentage-based. So a certain shot from a certain angle, just because you've took it with the exact same player two games in a row doesn't mean you get the same outcome. So that can be obviously quite frustrating. The counterpoint to that, though, and what I've always thought about it is, you know, you became pro in this game maybe because you had luck on your side a few times. So you have to look at both the positives. But yeah, and then tournament-wise is really, really difficult, especially nowadays. After all the tournaments pretty much got put online, it's just nowhere near as engaging. You're just not as motivated enough when there's no LAN at the end, there's no live crowd. It can just be really, really demotivating, to be honest, as well as how hard the qualifiers are now. So, like we said, it used to be for champions. Now you're in a huge Swiss bracket with, I'm not even sure of the number anymore. I think it's like 300-400 people or something. You go through that and only like top 16, I think, get any prize money if you manage to do that well. So that's kind
that's
of insane.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned there the pullback of events has happened as a consequence of COVID. you know, most esports had to adapt, find a way to work online. And I think FIFA was so heavily LAN-based, you know, seeing two players next to each other competing on the same console was kind of like, that was the prime of FIFA. And then when it went online, that challenge came where you had to do these online tournaments. It's going to be way more competitors as hundreds of people can enter. Then you start having to do Swiss. And then there's also the lack of stream now, you mentioned. So before, you know, you're performing for a live stream, performing to make that LAN, you're performing all that kind of stuff. But now there is a lack of stream to get onto. There's a lack of commentary. There's a lack of end game, end goal of the tournament. So what was that change when COVID came about for FIFA?
Yeah, so initially it cut through the FIFA 20 season, of course. And, you know, the only way they could finish out the season was with online tournaments. And they did that for a couple events, but also for something like the World Cup, for example. They actually didn't even have the World Cup at the end. They just split the prize pool with all the players. So they completely cancelled the World Cup.
So they didn't do like a regional online event or anything like that to...
I think there was like other replacement tournaments, but like...
That's crazy.
Yeah, they just split up the money basically and just said, this'll do. Which, you know, at the time was disappointing, but I think everybody was very accepting of the whole COVID situation. I was like, okay, next year might be a bit better. Next year then, COVID obviously lasted a bit longer than people would have thought. So that was completely online pretty much as well. And then you're thinking, okay, give it another year. Surely we'll get all our lands back. And we had like two lands the following year or something. And then this year, when there's been no COVID at all, I think there's like two or three lands, and there'll be about six in total by the end of it. But still, all the major qualifiers are all completely just online with no stream broadcast at all, right? So you're just hopping around different pros who are streaming their games on Twitch, and that's literally it. There's no commentary. There's no EA broadcast to be on. You know, there's all these esports orgs paying players, and they have jerseys with sponsors, and they're just not getting shown on stream or anything, and it's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you've mentioned that was with FIFA 20 and so on, and we're waiting on the next release of the next game. We're still uncertain. There's been rumors about the next FIFA. There might be issues with licensing. There might be different release dates, all this kind of stuff. As a FIFA pro, what's that wait for the next game like? Because so many people sort of see that as a big hard reset. So what was it like for you when you're in that off season waiting for the next release?
Yeah, I mean, normally it's a lot of nerves as well as excitement, because the meta just in general changes so much every year. And that's what really makes, I feel, FIFA such a unique esport. And it's why you see a lot of imbalances. Obviously, you see your top 5 to 10 players are good every year. But outside of that, you see new talent creep up out of just nowhere every single year because the game has changed so much, which just makes it really inconsistent. It's hard to actually have a long career successfully in FIFA esports. And then with this year, I mean, it's going to be a new game as well. It's not even FIFA anymore. So that just adds to the drama and more uncertainty, which is never good, to be honest.
Yeah, you say about the meta changing. So to my untrained eyes, I see a new release of FIFA and it looks like the same game. And I always used to hear from players, oh, 17 was my favorite game, or this game was... And one thing I heard from that, especially when I was at Vitality hearing from them, was the scoreline was a big factor. So some games, the scoreline would be unrealistic to real football. You'd get like 10-4 games and stuff like that. The higher level players preferred that because the more chances to score and the more ways you could stop people scoring, it made the game more even in terms of skill and everything. But then when you get down to like the realistic scoreline versions of the game where it would be 2-1s and 1-0s and stuff like that, it would end up being a little bit lucky if you got a goal, and then that could decide a match for you. Outside of the scoreline side of FIFA, explain to me how the meta changes.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's an overall kind of cycle that happens between, like, skill moves and shooting and then crossing, stuff like this. So one year, for example, crossing would just be absolutely insane, and everybody will just have really tall players with good jumping, good heading, and you'll literally run down the line, cross the ball in constantly. Like, this is what FIFA 19 was, essentially, and just play for headers the entire game. And then when you're defending, you have huge fullbacks, which is notoriously a shorter position. You have like 6'3" players there because people are just crossing it all game. And that's the only thing that matters. And, you know, that's completely different to maybe a FIFA 17 or 18, which was a tiki-taka sort of game. So it was quick passing, 1-2s here, just trying to break through that defense and find that little tidy finish into the corner. So, you know, that's two completely different games, but they were back-to-back years. So you had all these guys incredible at passing, incredible at doing these little runs, whatever. And then next year, they're crossing for all 90 minutes. Completely different skill set. And, you know, you could have been one of the best in the world, and all of a sudden you're extremely average at the game.
Yeah, that's crazy. But then still, even though you said there's a lot of randomness with the RNG, the percentages within the game as to whether something would work or not, and then you got the different styles of gameplay, you do still see the same players come out on top. So there is still enough skill in it that top players win more often. Why do you think that happens despite the game being so frustrating?
Yeah, well, obviously it's still luck-based, you know, at the end of the day. But if you just do the right thing enough times, you do tend to win more. It's one of those.
So it's kind of like variance within a card game, like a poker player who's good will tend to win more often.
Exactly. That's the best example. And that's actually something I used to say previously, is actually how I used to describe FIFA esports, was just like poker. Like, sometimes your luck is just out. Doesn't matter how good or bad you are, you just lose. But then on average, over the course of years, the best players will still win.
Well, I'm always intrigued hearing about new esports and how things work, but we'll have to cross our fingers for the future of esports. But I think everyone always asks the same question to FIFA players. What's the most you've ever spent on a game of FIFA? And if I'm not mistaken, you guys would get funding from the orgs you're representing to help you pay for that.
Yeah, so we do get funding from teams. Not all teams, but a lot of teams, especially the big orgs, would fund partial amounts, not the full amounts. But myself personally, I think was $5,000 was the most I spent in 1 year, which...
That's quite low compared to some
players. Isn't that crazy? Like, honestly, you know, if you're within the scene and I say $5,000, you're like, yeah, okay. Yeah, sounds about right, I guess. Like, it's not even shocking. Which is terrible. Like, but yeah, for context, I mean, a lot of people spend over $10,000 a year, especially the top players, because you just need to have the best cards. You're literally at a disadvantage if you don't. So you're just kind of forced to.
Yeah, one of the few esports where pay to win is legitimate. We'll go back to your origin, though. So for anyone who can recognize your accent, they can tell you're from Ireland. You grew up in Ireland as a young gamer. What was life growing up as a young Irish? Tobin's your name, right? Young Irish Tobin.
Yeah, well, my accent is completely weird, first of all, because I was actually born in England and then grew up in Ireland. Okay. So got that kind of mix of an accent as well. Then I actually looked it up from watching American TV, is why there's American twang in my accent as well. So it's basically three accents put together. So it's quite difficult. But yeah, growing up in Ireland, basically just played a lot of video games actually growing up. Probably not exactly a surprise. But, you know, just a lot of time put in, I guess. And then I just had that natural kind of instinct for gaming and like being decent, and I feel like that's what it comes down to a lot of time, is just I naturally would beat a lot of people in FIFA. Mm-hmm. I wasn't necessarily playing more, I wasn't necessarily practicing, just, you know, just based on ability, just off the bat I would just be a bit better at the game, and that I suppose eventually did translate.
So was FIFA your main game throughout your childhood as well?
It actually wasn't. It was for a few years, but then I played a lot of NBA 2K and Call of Duty. So I actually prefer both of those games, and I always did. I just happened to be a lot better at FIFA, you know? So it was one of those where I just made the conscious decision, especially when they did announce kind of the new qualifying system and all that, that, you know, I was like, okay, never going to be pro, unlike NBA 2K, which it's seen as different anyways. And then Call of Duty, I was never nearly as good. So FIFA was just the one that was just, you know, I really had a shot to make it.
Yeah, well, you're growing up playing the typical sort of young boys games, FIFA and Call of Duty. I guess we'll go on to top five games. So we always ask everyone about their top five games, and I feel like it's a good time to ask about it. Which games would you put in your top five? They can be based off of influence on career as well, or just general enjoyment. And if you do reference a series-based game like FIFA or Call of Duty, you have to be specific. You can't just say the whole franchise.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
What would you go for?
Well, at number one.
Oh, you're going to order? You can order them if actually, you want. You don't have to, but you can order them.
Ooh. Nah, this is going to be number one and nothing else is going to be ranked.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay. Number one is going to be RuneScape, and now old school RuneScape, because that's the real version. And that's just the greatest game of all time. And I don't think I need to explain.
No, I love that. RuneScape. That's where I first named myself, Gregan, was because of RuneScape. I was always a free-to-play player, so I didn't get to enjoy the amazing side of RuneScape. I was very much like in awe of the map whenever I looked at it. I assume you're a paid player.
So I was free-to-play back in the day. And I still have never bought membership, but nowadays they have a thing called bonds. So you can buy membership using in-game currency.
Okay.
So yeah, you can actually be a member while being free to play.
So I guess like the hardcore free to play, you can earn membership.
Yeah. So I kind of got blessed because the bonds are like really hard to make enough coins in free to play. But one of my friends I used to play, he just gave me my first bond, and then with that, it's 14 days of membership, so it's not even a month. You have 14 days. In that 14 days, I was able to make enough for my next bond, and then I made a little bit more, and you know, you keep going, and yeah, so still haven't spent any money on it.
So after RuneScape, what are the other four games?
I'm gonna have to chuck in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3.
Okay.
It is going to be a favorite of mine. FIFA 18, because I want Gfinity on it. Pretty self-explanatory. Other than that, I'm going to have to chuck in a Pokemon game, but I'm trying to think which one.
As you can see, I do like my Pokemon.
Yeah, no, it's looking good. I'm probably going to go...
I will judge you for this. We had a previous guest say Sword and Shield, and I very much battered them for that, because...
Did that episode go up?
Like yeah, you let that go up. Yeah, I let that go up because I ripped into them. Don't worry.
Oh, okay, I see. No, so I didn't get past like Gen 4, so it has to be in one of the first.
Okay, 40. Yeah, that's fair.
I think I'll go Emerald.
Solid game. It's not my favorite, but I think it's a solid game. I'm from the first four generations. I'm a Heart Gold, Soul Silver kind of guy. I think their remakes of the best games and the way they remade them added a lot to the game.
Yeah.
But Emerald was a class game too.
Yeah. I mean, I like all of them, to be honest. Yeah. But yeah.
It's hard to pick one from the Pokemon series.
I also just haven't played them in like 15 years, so I'm just trying to base it off a bit of nostalgia, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's the number five then?
And number five, it's a tough one, honestly. I'm just going to go pretty basic, pretty obvious, and just go with Skyrim, I think.
Skyrim. So Skyrim's a game I've never played, but I always wish I had, because I played it through watching other people play it, which I still think you get a good experience out of it. But I should imagine when it first came out and you're just immersed in that world fully, it was quite the experience.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And to be fair, it has definitely aged now as well, to like go back and play it. The gameplay feels a bit weird. But yeah, no, honestly, it was just so immersive. It was funny because I hadn't even played any of the other ones, just got Skyrim, just got absolutely lost in the world. It just looked beautiful at the time. And it just had some great storylines. Ironically, it's one of the only games that I really like, and the main storyline was not even that good. It was like very average. It was all the side stuff that was so, so incredible.
Yeah, you could take it whichever way you wanted to go with it.
And, yeah.
Those kind of games have always been the best kind of immersive games, where you don't feel like you're going through a set of routes that's been planned out for you. You're sort of playing out a movie instead. You can choose your direction. It's a solid top five. I'll tell you what, that might be one of the best top fives we've had. I think FIFA is that will polarize some people.
Yeah.
But I mean, think you have to put it in there.
Yeah, it wouldn't be otherwise. Like, definitely not. But I have to give it to token placement.
Why do so many FIFA pros hate FIFA?
You know what? I think it goes back to it being such a casual game, such a childhood nostalgic game, that now you've converted into, I have to be the best at this game, I have to win every time, and it's such a job and a chore. I feel like that becomes a real issue, because what makes it such a great casual game is how random it is, and how like so casual the mechanics are, and anybody can be kind of decent, and you can just play your friends in it, and it's football-based, so people understand it off the bat instantly, and it's just so fun. But then when you actually have to take it to that competitive level, naturally the game just doesn't translate well. So it just goes back to that randomness, I think, as well.
Yeah, and another thing back with Gfinity Elite Series I noticed, because there's three games at Gfinity Elite Series in our season, Rocket League, Street Fighter, and FIFA. Now, FIFA's biggest difference for me was how little people wanted to stay and watch it. So with Street Fighter and Rocket League, the players who'd played their games that day or were playing later would turn up to watch the other games because they'd want to see what's happening. Especially with Street Fighter, they'd be so into it, they'd get involved. FIFA players, the moment they're done, they're off to go get some food. They'd never come back. If they'd lost, they definitely weren't coming back. If they'd won, they might stay because they want to soak up the positive energy they're getting sent. So why would FIFA players not want to stick around and watch the game?
I blame the reason it's also just an unsuccessful esport. It's just not entertaining to watch, I feel, for the most part. And I think that, I guess, is the main reason. And it's just a bit too slow-paced, I feel. But which it has restrictions of not just being a casual game, but being based off football, which football fundamentally is just not that fun a sport. You know, it's a good to watch. It's great in the background and stuff. But if you actually sat down by yourself and watched 90 minutes of football without going on your phone, okay, it's not a great experience unless it's like a big game, maybe the World Cup or Champions League. If you just watch an average league match for 90 minutes, it's just not that entertaining at all.
I am very much in agreement there. I used to be a goalkeeper in football, so I think I've definitely got a bit of trauma from standing in goal on a wet day, not wanting to be there, having to watch 90 minutes of football, especially if when there was a period of my time where I was a goalkeeper on a very good team where we beat everyone, and I would touch the ball maybe like three times a game to go pick it up from behind the goal where they'd had a big clear and it's gone too far, where I didn't take the goal kicks because I didn't have a very good goal kick. So I'd give it to our defender who could welly it miles. So I literally would be the guy who'd pick up the ball from behind the goal, and that was all I'd do in some games. So I think I've definitely got a bit of hatred for football because of that reason. But it's interesting hearing it from you. I mean, every FIFA player is going to have a different experience. I think definitely when a player is new into the scene, they're going to be a little bit more like, no, FIFA's great and all that kind of stuff. But I think there's definitely that aging within FIFA players that I've not seen in other games as much, where people do fall out of love with it quite quickly, which I think is an esports thing anyway, because you're turning a hobby into a career.
Yeah, well, I think specifically in FIFA as well is the game change, right? So like FIFA 22, 23, 21 or whatever is so different in my mind, at least because it is at the pro level, to like the 17, 18, 19, that just naturally the game is way less interesting to me as well. So maybe had FIFA 18 just been that continuous title that was continuously updated and was still at least similar to what I fell in love with, maybe I might still have more interest there. So I think the title change definitely is a factor.
Yeah. Well, we do also ask all of our guests what their greatest ever gaming achievement is. I'm going to ask you, but not allowed to say the GFinity Elite Series win, because I'm assuming that's what you would have said.
Yeah, so you just mean like a gaming accomplishment rather than...
Yeah, like in-game accomplishment. Typically, esports people come on and talk about their greatest ever achievement in competition, but obviously we have a lot of people on here who've never competed in esports. It's always fun hearing about their little in-game achievements, 100%ing a game or something like that.
Damn. I mean, mine's going to have to be RuneScape-based, I feel.
Go on then. What have you maxed out in RuneScape?
I have a good few 99s, to be fair.
A good few 99s. Is it still 99 the limit? They haven't like...
On old school it is.
Yeah. On old school, okay.
So on RuneScape Trio, whatever, some of like 120 or okay. Whatever. I'm going to go with 99 Slayer, which is... you know, if you know RuneScape, that's decent. If you don't, that means nothing.
Are you 99 wood cutting?
No.
No.
No, so I really don't like skilling. I find it really boring. I liked it when I was a kid because it was like so chill, so whatever. But now it's like such a different experience, because now it's like, okay, I've won maybe 2 hours free this evening after work. I'm not going to sit there and just do a really passive thing. I need something engaging, because otherwise it just feels like wasting it away.
That's fair. What about mining? No. I loved mining.
You loved mining?
Yeah, that was my highest level when I played RuneScape. I think I got to level 50, 60-ish in mining as a free-to-play player. That's pretty impressive.
Big. I respect that.
Well, anyway, I think level 99 in any skill in RuneScape is an achievement of time and willingness to repeat the same thing over and over again. So fair play to you on that. So we spoke a little bit about the challenges of being a FIFA pro. I think one thing that I've always interested, because there's not many chances to have this now in esports. If you're an esports pro in a game, typically you're uncertain of what's next afterwards. You know, we hear pros become coaches, the more sort of like switched on logical people, especially in games where there's a lot more tactics involved. and you hear a lot of highly energetic pros, and ones who've got personality become content creators or casters, and the more organized will go into management, maybe within orgs, or they'll find jobs like yours with the startup. Did you think ahead after your pro career what you were going to do afterwards, and did you plan for it, or did it just sort of all happen?
So overall, my plan was, so I still have my bachelor's in financial maths. So that was my real fallback plan, was I just get like some sort of finance job or whatever and be fine. But I had done like a year's work experience. Ironically, I was actually still doing that work experience when I won Gfinity. So that was like, I had to get the Friday off or whatever work to fly over. But anyways, so I had that ready, but I knew I just wanted to stay in esports to some extent, or at least gaming. So yeah, I didn't plan it at all. Got really lucky with this job and just kind of landed it. So that was handy. But I mean, I essentially retired like a year and a half ago. And then I went into content creation for a bit, did some coaching, did some casting, kind of trialed it all out. Ultimately, I still think management is like a really interesting and cool thing. I do want to get into it at some stage. But for now, you know, this is the job I'm going with.
What advice would you give to a current pro player who was worried about their future after being a competitor?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you listed was great. It's like, based on your personality type, maybe think of what you can kind of go down. Obviously, it's always helpful to build up your socials and stuff while you are competing if you do want to stay in it after. But yeah, it's all about how you position yourself. If you do make extra content, you're easily going to go into content creation. If you're a logical player, like you said, coaching's definitely an option. But it can be difficult. So it's definitely worth thinking about.
Yeah, and I guess the biggest challenge for a lot of esports people will be based around if their game struggles. So, you know, being a coach, caster, content creator is amazing if your game continues to grow. But just looking at like games that have just disappeared, and Heroes of the Storm, Halo, all these titles that when they were booming, it was amazing. Thankfully, a lot of them have convertible skills. But I guess for something like FIFA, if FIFA starts to struggle like it is right now, it must be quite scary for some of those pro players when orgs are all pulling out, especially with the current climate, as a lot of people seeing FIFA as their most expensive, worthless asset in terms of esports. They're going to cut that first. So for those people who are worried about FIFA, it must be quite scary.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very volatile, extremely volatile, not in a good position at all. Honestly, I'm not too sure what a lot of people are going to do. It's actually worrying, like, on a really serious note. So I'm not even sure what to do.
Some of the problems FIFA's had has been the injection of money from football clubs. You know, if you're going to come into esports as a football club, FIFA is the logical step. The struggle there is that FIFA isn't the strongest of esports. It meant the market got quite inflated at one point, where a lot of people were getting paid far too much money and not much return for those clubs. Are you starting to see those clubs now pulling out of FIFA?
Yeah, so clubs-wise, a lot of them are still within it, you know, and they're quite strong, I suppose. You know, just as a football club, naturally your finances are considerably stronger than an esports organization. What we're seeing is just esports organizations that have been overpaying players just pulling out because it's just not financially worth it at all. Especially in this economic climate, like, so many teams are getting cut. If you had a team to cut, like, it should be FIFA realistically. Like, it's just not giving you that return, except for the few circumstances where you've signed players with big followings, because there is those players that do have huge followings.
Especially if the watching of the players is the way you engage with the esport now. If you've got a big player, it's not only going to be good for their socials, but for the actual viewing of the esport.
Yeah, exactly. With them streaming all the FGS qualifiers, which is interesting. But yeah, so you can get away with it that way. But then what you do have a lot in FIFA esports, and probably in other esports, is you have these players that are just really, really good, but they have like 200 followers on Twitter, right? They don't stream, they don't make content, they don't do anything. They're just really good at the game, and they were like winning tournaments or whatever. Now you've got extremely low prize pool, few events, and there is no stream broadcast. So if they don't have a following themselves, A, they're not going to make one, and B, you're just never going to see the return on the investment there. So teams with those sort of players definitely pulling out.
One thing FIFA's always done quite well, I think, is they've had a national system, which is something we've all wanted in esports across the board. Rocket League's had it a few times. We had the Olympics, we had Commonwealth Games, and it's an amazing opportunity for that national pride to come together. And you work with the Irish FIFA team. What's that like for you guys when you're coming together to make a team?
Yeah, so, well, going back a couple of years, they held a little tournament in Ireland, and then the winner of that was going to be the first national team player, which I did win. Obviously, I wouldn't be bringing it up for no reason.
Let me tell you about this story.
Yeah. So that was great. And then Tyrone was the other player playing with me after he won the E-League of Ireland, which just started this week, coincidentally. And then we came together. We had Eric as our coach. We had a manager as well. And it was such a great feeling, I'll be honest. I didn't think I would like care or like about it that much, but actually playing for a country, even in esports, even online with no crowd, it's completely different feeling. Oh my God. You actually just get so into it. You get so passionate. Like I hadn't cared this much in ages. Absolutely incredible feeling. And now I'm obviously the manager of it. So I'm picking the players. Kind of a coach as well, so going through some strategy, but it's just really, really great feeling to still be involved in that.
I think this is something that's different from England compared to a lot of other countries, and I noticed this in sport as well, is we have a bit of a weird pride here in England, whereby if we're not winning, we're annoyed. Whereas in other countries, there's just the idea of competing for your nation. Everyone's a lot more proud, right? I used to live with a Turkish guy, and Turkey played against England around that time, and it was he was like, "Are you watching the game?" And I was like, "I don't really care that much." He's like, "This is huge, you know, we get to play against each other." And he told me that they'd never beaten us in the last so many years, so if they got a draw, they would celebrate. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, "What?" Like that just wouldn't slide in England. If you're not getting a gold medal, if you're not winning, it's not good enough. And it's so true in football, right? If we're not winning the World Cup or Euros, everyone's annoyed. So how did that feel for you differing in Ireland compared to this sort of English culture, like growing up supporting your nation?
Yeah, I mean, in Ireland, yeah, it's just all about, you know, any sort of national pride. It is a thing, like on the news in Ireland, like you have maybe a boxer does something or a rower does something or some like sport you've never even heard of, but if they get some sort of achievement, it'll be put on the news, it'll be put like all over like Irish social media or whatever, and everybody will be so proud of this person who they didn't know existed 24 hours ago, but they're like, they're Irish, they achieved something, like it might be a bronze medal at like some random event that's not even important, but like everybody will be so proud that somebody Irish like achieved something, and it's just such a wholesome feeling.
Yeah, I think this is something we need to learn here in England from other countries. I think it just comes back to our roots of the history of England and how, yeah, a little bit of superiority complex that we struggle with. But no, it was great to hear about you with the Ireland team and how it made you feel, because I think that's something we need to learn here in England. You competed in some World Cups then with that?
Yeah, so it's called the E-Nations because there's the FIFA World Cup, which is the 1v1 tournament. So they had to rebrand the World Cup to E-Nations. But yeah, unfortunately, we didn't qualify for it. The year I was competing, it was really gutting, honestly.
When you say didn't qualify, what did that look like? Was that how many teams qualified? How many countries?
I think it was 16 qualified, so that's worldwide. So it is quite difficult to qualify for. But we were relatively close, to be honest, and we were playing quite well, so that was one of the worst ones when, like, you know, I think we were like a win or two off. We were showing we were at that level and you just don't make it. It's almost worse than if you just got smoked and you just literally finished last. I'd be like, okay, we didn't deserve to be there, whatever. But when you were kind of close.
In a game like FIFA as well, where, you know, it goes slightly differently on the day.
Yeah, no, exactly. Tough. And we had like Spain and Portugal both in our group as well. And they're just complete powerhouses. And we were getting like results against them as well. So the optimism was there, but it just fell eventually.
Well, I think the FIFA discussion has been eye-opening for me, because with Rocket League, it's very different ecosystem, very skill-based. You know, there's a lot more org involvement and less of the kind of sports clubs and national side of it. Talk to me a bit about the e-Premier League. So this was something that I saw there was some issues with, in particular around players being on orgs and then getting signed with clubs. And there was that sort of like both players, a player assigned to both teams. What sort of happened there when that came into the scene?
Yeah, so e-Premier League, and then for most leagues basically in the world, is what happens is EA partner with these leagues and they run mostly a one-off tournament, but sometimes they run an actual weekly league. And the players, if they want to play in this league, they have to sign up and like qualify for one of these teams or just sign with them based on the club. But yeah, as a result, whilst with them on any club duty, they are not allowed to have any esports organization merchandise. They can't talk about them. They can't name their franchise in like any interviews or anything. They literally cannot speak about it at all. So like you go from a Fnatic player to a Liverpool player or whatever, and you're Liverpool for this tournament, and that's it.
It's crazy. And that did that go down well?
I mean, see, in FIFA, I guess people didn't care too much, but I mean, I assume the orgs weren't happy. Players just aren't really too concerned, I suppose. But the orgs were definitely not happy at all. I know Footwiz, for one example, is definitely not happy about it as all. Because to be fair, these are the guys that even allow these players to be in this position. You know, if Footwiz or Fnatic or whatever aren't paying these salaries, these players aren't able to play full-time, they're not even qualifying for these tournaments. So, I mean, it completely makes sense.
Yeah, well, FIFA is one of those esports I still will never understand fully because it just seems so different compared to everything else. But now you've kind of, you got past that now. Like you said, you're doing your stealth startup project. And you've moved to London, is it fairly recently?
Yeah, so I moved to London only 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago now. So obviously was born here and did live here 1 year during the Fnatic Gaming House. But it's good to be back. Honestly, I just love the hustle and bustle of London. I love busyness most of the time, except when there's West Ham games on in Stratford. But, yeah. You know, other than that, you know, it's nice.
Yeah, well, we had a bit of an interesting one because we walked past each other twice. I don't know if you know it was twice.
Oh,
I saw you the first one from a bit further away and was like, I think that's Ranners. And then we walked past each other a second time. We didn't fully acknowledge each other, but we both messaged afterwards like, was that you? Because we hadn't seen each other in like 4 years or whatever. So now we're sort of neighbors. I thought it would be a great opportunity to get you on and chat about everything. But being in London as an esports person, have you had a chance to explore the London esports scene and like what you can get up to on the local level with like all the local bars and stuff like that?
I unfortunately haven't, and it's something I've really been meaning to do. I just haven't had like the proper excuse to do it. I've also been extremely busy, way busier than I thought I would have been.
You can't tell us what you've been doing.
Well, not only that stuff, but it's in like just other things as well. So like, for example, you know, I was coaching at e-Premier League. I was coaching at e-Champions League as well, both of those events in Stratford. And then I've just been like on holiday a few times, and I was like, oh, I'll go back to Ireland, you know, every like 3 weeks or something. I haven't been back yet. So it's like, I just feel like my weekends keep filling up. Now it's Easter weekend. It's my housemate's birthday as well. And then I think e-Champions League, the next group is the weekend after, and then just go, go, go.
Yeah, I think there's definitely room. You mentioned there's not much in-person stuff. There's definitely room. There's a few venues in London that'd be good for it, of doing some like local events and creating those going forward. So I have to chat with you afterwards about maybe setting one of those up, because that could be fun. But you've been with Tundra for a bit. That was last year, right? Why did you join Tundra? Was that as a creator and coach?
Yeah, so that was content creator and coach. I was really making that transition from being a player, because I suppose my skill level dropped off, but not to the level where I needed to retire. I probably still could have competed, just not as good as I would like to. But I was really wanting to see, could I be successful in like the content creator role or the coaching. Now, coaching I absolutely loved, and that was really good. But then Tundra did pull out of FIFA Esports, so they just kept me and Seb on as content creators. And ultimately, I did just fall out of love with the content creation. I felt like, especially because that was now all I was doing full-time, that was my main source of income, it really became, will this video get views? Not, did I enjoy this video? Do I even enjoy FIFA? Do I enjoy any of these other things? No. Will this video get views so I can get paid? And that's what it boiled down to. And I was like, this is terrible. Not enjoying this at all. So I needed to change.
So with your content creation, it was around FIFA. What kind of stuff were you making?
Yeah, so I was making like tutorial related stuff, whether that's like giving out custom tactics or actually just passing, shooting, attacking, defending sort of tutorials. Because obviously pro background is going to help that a lot. And that's how I see the game, right? That's where my expertise are. But then ultimately, there's the two caveats of it. One, that's great at the start of the cycle, you know? And two, there's only so much you can do with that. Like, you can only make an attacking tutorial so often. Like, I can't have a daily attacking tutorial. It wouldn't even make sense. So after like a couple of months, you're basically, the peak viewership is dropping already, like a lot. And you've kind of covered all the bases anyway. So you just sat there with like nothing left to do. And then I just wasn't even enjoying the game that much either. So it just kind of left me kind of lost.
Yeah, that is a weird thing about FIFA. So many things about FIFA that just doesn't make sense in the esports space. With esports, typically they have quite a steady growth, or they plateau, or they keep their numbers up because people enjoy playing the game for the game. They like competing in it. Like, for example, I played Rocket League for 6-7 years. Consistently every month I'll clock up my hours. Same thing now with Valorant. You know, I log on every day to play a few games because I love playing it. Those kinds of games typically are the ones that become esports, even if they weren't designed to be esports before, like Rocket League wasn't. It just sort of happened. With FIFA, you go through the cycle of a new release game, which, you know, if you see a game, I don't know, a story-based game, the numbers of interactions on it, you put content out about it, Twitch streamers, YouTube videos and everything, they'll boom at the start of the release or even before the release now that we have like early access stuff, right? So you'll see those numbers go up and then they quickly drop and then level out at a point where, you know, some people might pick it up late, some people might love the game and keep playing it afterwards. Is that that's sort of what you see in FIFA around the new release, right?
Yeah, so there's that crazy huge spike. Everybody's back on new cards, new ratings, new gameplay, because the gameplay does change every year, right? So that does make it definitely interesting. And then people, after like a month of, you know, they kind of get accustomed to the gameplay, whatever, and like, oh, it's pretty much the same game. Nothing's changed. I'm kind of bored now. And yeah, I don't care anymore.
So what does that look like? Are you able to give numbers for how your viewership would change from, say, that first week compared to 2 months later?
Yeah, so for like my Twitch viewership, you know, you'd have like 100 plus or whatever for the first like month, then it will drop to like 40, then like 30, 20 for, as it goes on, just steadily declines really, really badly. Then same on YouTube, videos are getting like 30, 40, 50k views down to like 5 to 10k views. So it really takes a huge hit.
And if that's your main rent paying method, it's pretty rough. And even for the orgs who are trying to pay you to get them views, you know, there's going to be a long period of time when they're not getting that. It's mind blowing. I mean, honestly, this podcast has been great because it's just been a chance to sort of process all the stuff that I knew about FIFA, but getting you to explain it a little bit deeper level. And hopefully for people at home, they've been learning a bit about the ecosystem of FIFA, even when it was doing well, right? Because there was a period of time around FIFA 18, around your successful period, where it was doing very well. Did you see the future of FIFA that we have now, or did you think it was going to continue going? Obviously, COVID hit, but no one could have expected that.
Yeah, see, there was a great increase from FIFA 17 to FIFA 18, and then even FIFA 19. Like, FIFA 19 was crazy. I think of eligible lands, so say in the European region even, I think it was 17 in the year. It was ridiculous. You had the 6 majors and then like 6 minor LQE events. And then you had like E-Premier League, E-Champions League, you had playoffs, you had World Cup, you had E-Nations. You had so many things going on and every single one was a LAN. Like, the online qualifiers get you to like top 32 is how it would do, because it was like a bracketed qualifier. Then as soon as you get top 32, it pops up. It's like, okay, we're pausing here. You're getting invited to the event. Now we're flying you out, you're staying in a hotel, you're having the LAN. We're doing it all in person. We're having a broadcast. We're having commentators. We're having hosts. We're having analysts. We're having everything for all these events in the year, right? And then nowadays it's like, yeah, so there'll be 5 of these qualifiers. If you get top 16 in Europe, you'll get like $1,000. And none of it will be streamed anywhere. Nobody will even know if you win it. But you're playing for these qualification points that get you to that one playoffs LAN at the end of the year. And if you somehow do really well in that and make the World Cup, well, then the World Cup will be an event as well. But other than that, no, it's going to be pretty quiet here. Oh, and you also have to spend about like 100 plus hours a month in Division Rivals to qualify for the qualifiers. So that's like the in-game like ladder system, basically. So yeah, enjoy doing that completely unpaid as well.
And you'll need to pay to do in that.
Sorry,
yeah,
sorry.
You have to buy all your
And that's after spending 10 grand, please. Thank you.
That's crazy. And you mentioned to me beforehand how esports in general, especially in FIFA, is seen as a bit of a marketing tool. That's the case for pretty much all esports. But in FIFA in particular, you thought that was the case, right? Is they were seeing it as this marketing tool to have the best players shown off so that people would then spend the money to buy the cards so that they could have their best team. And then with COVID, they reduced the amount of tournaments that were going on. It was all online, but they still saw that growth for different reasons, because obviously gaming had a massive boom during COVID. And so that growth happened despite the esports scene dropping off. Do you think that's what triggered the drop in support for FIFA esports?
Yeah, I feel like definitely had an impact, because, I mean, at this stage with COVID fully gone, they clearly don't have interest on putting on all these tournaments again. Now, you could argue, okay, maybe they're waiting to drop FIFA, and when they release their own EA game next year, they might have a different attempt on it, and that, well, remains to be seen. But, I mean, the clearest thing ever about it clearly being marketing for them was how they used to commentate games. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but they would always say, okay, I play it true, I score. They won't say Rano's scores, they'll say the player name. So they'll say Cristiano Ronaldo scored or Messi scored. And then they would talk about that item in game and about that great card. And that's why I scored. Not because I'm a pro, not because I've played this game day in, day out, and I've perfected this. No, it's because I have this new Team of the Year item or whatever that is so good, and you have to go spend money to get it.
Because it wasn't like that in Gfinity Elite Series, was it? Because that was done by a different, that was done separately. Because I remember when you won, it was like Ranners was shouted out, right?
Yeah, so I suppose if you win something, it probably still is your name, right? It's not super extreme, but yeah, I mean, that would have been held by Gfinity, not EA anyways.
Yeah, no talk about you as a player and you as a strategic player and how you do things, whereas now it's like, oh, they've used this card. I hadn't even noticed that. Yeah. And it makes so much sense now you say it, because whenever you see a goal go in, it is always a scream of the name of the player. Which is weird, because so many of the players just are always scoring, right? It would always be Ronaldo scoring. So it'd just be a constant, Ronaldo scored, and then the other way, Ronaldo scored, which is definitely one of the things I found very off-putting about FIFA, was the fact that everyone just had the same players a lot of the time. Do you ever think there was room for them to change that system up and make it more accessible by having, you know, like a limit on the teams?
So, I mean, nowadays with qualifiers, to be fair, there is these limits they bring in. Problem is they don't really work, because so basically now it might be like you have one or two icons or whatever, as opposed to having like a full icon team. But what that's done is driven up the price of, say, the R9 Ronaldo. Like, that's just a stupid expensive card now, because everybody wants that as their one icon. Mm. Whereas, say he's 50 million coins. You have to spend all 50 million on him. But when you used to be able to have multiple icons in a team, a variety, whatever, you could spread that overall and you could build a different team. Whereas now, yeah, those like top players are just extremely inflated prices.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, they've done well with their marketing tool, but definitely seems to be in their benefit and less for the players in the scene. Is there anything, if right now you say, like, I'm not going to say look down the lens, but say you look down the lens and there was someone who was deciding how FIFA esports should be for the future, say maybe for the next game onwards, what would you tell them as like the one thing they need to change about FIFA esports?
Oh, the one thing.
Because obviously there's a lot of things you'd change.
Yeah, I have a top two.
Okay.
But
you can go with two then.
Okay, I'll go with my top two. So one is we just need the return of all these LAN events. That's just not even a question, because that's what, honestly, you get all these great moments, you get people actually invested, you get proper hosting of streams, blah, blah, blah. And the second one, super easy, is online qualifiers use unlocked accounts. They have the unlocked accounts. They use them at all the tournaments. So once you pay 10 grand on this team and then you use it to qualify, you get to the tournament, then you have an unlocked account. Why not have an unlocked account on the qualifiers and make that completely fair game? Obviously, you could argue they'll lose out on money, but realistically, they would make it back tenfold if they actually invested in esports and just allowed it to be completely open. Because you might have seen, like, the only thing else I can talk about is, like, Call of Duty ranked play. So ranked play basically has the CDL rules. So everybody has the exact same guns as the pros. They have the same attachments, same perks, whatever, and you don't have to level up to unlock it, never mind have to pay money. And then people start watching pro Call of Duty because they want to see how the pros play it. They look up pro videos on YouTube because they want the same attachments, they want the same whatever, and it just meshes the general community with the pro community and just lifts it all together. Whereas there's this huge disparity, because even if I wanted to like care about FIFA esports, and I look at it and I see this guy's team is worth like 10 grand, I'm like, it's not even realistic. I don't even want to watch that because I can't replicate any of that stuff in my own game.
So yeah, that makes sense. So once you get into the competitive game, you have unlocked accounts, but then for the rest of it, you have to buy your team and so on. Yeah, that makes sense. There's a similar kind of thing like in Clash Royale and other mobile games. When you're playing the competitive mode, they have like a level reduction system. Whereas when you're doing ladder, you can level them up and get the advantage through leveling up. But then when you get into that competitive space, that's where they have the fairness. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I guess the way they could do it would be either have all the most expensive ones unlock, like you said, or have a system, like we said before, where you're only allowed two icons. I guess it would still be an unlocked account in that sense, wouldn't it? You still have the same rules, but...
Yeah, the only way is like if they made it like really low quantity, so like only gold cards or something. Mm. So then you could get all the best gold cards really cheap in-game, and that wouldn't be a problem at all. But yeah, unlocked accounts is definitely the best solution.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. There you go. Unlocked accounts and more lands. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of fingers crossed right now for FIFA saying, EA Sports, can you do this? But I think I don't actually know when we started, but I think we're pretty much wrapping up here. And I want to say thank you for coming on, talking about FIFA. I love having people on here talking about stuff that I don't know much about, because ultimately this podcast is not just about you guys telling your story, but it's about educating me and the people at home about a topic that I don't know much about. And I think in esports, we can always learn from each other. And I think FIFA is an amazing case study for esports for a lot of things not to do, but a lot of things to do as well. FIFA did an amazing job of bridging the gap between the non-esports world and the esports world, and then sort of struggled to keep that going as the game struggled during COVID. But there's a lot of stuff you mentioned today that I think made me appreciate FIFA more in the positive things about it, but also realize that there is no perfect formula right now for esports. So thank you for all that. I guess I'll ask the final question of the podcast, which I ask everyone.
And
you don't have to talk about FIFA in this. This is a gaming in general. What does gaming mean to you?
Oh, damn. That's a great question. I really should have researched. what does gaming mean to me? Gaming to me is... I'm going to say the perfect hobby in isolation is what I'm going to say. So, you know, you can just, anybody can just game basically whenever they want. You know, you don't need people to play with. You don't need any specific ability or anything to do it. You can just do it in your own time. You can play competitive, you can play casual, you can play story mode, you can play whatever. So I think it's just... It's just something for everybody.
Something for everybody. Thank you.
Thanks. Sports Social Podcast Network.